Barbie appears, at first sight, a very trivial thing, and easily understood. Its analysis shows that it is, in reality, a very queer thing, abounding in magic and mystery. It stands with its toes on the ground and its heels in the air. Even before last summer's collective, creative outpouring of Barbenheimer memes led us to think about the shared roots of the bomb and the bombshell, there was the Barbie Liberation Organization, the BLO, swapping voice boxes between Barbies and G.I. Joes so that she said, "Vengeance is mine," and he said, "Math class is tough." The memes spilled over into Union Organizer Barbie, Red Shirt, copy of Das Kapital, and Land Back Barbie, Tears, Tiny U-Lock. Portland's Mosquito Fleet displayed a shelter-in-place dream house, with information about the dangers of fossil fuel spills and oil train explosions. The BLO presented eco-warrior Barbies, modeled on figures like Julia Butterfly Hill and Greta Thunberg. People make rebellious use of mass culture, and the campy absurdity of Barbie's world of hyperbolic gender without genitals seems to lend itself to that creative repurposing, as though it's already an imitation with no original, a copy of a copy, parody all the way down. So yeah, people will make creative and rebellious use of even the most plasticized elements of corporate mass culture. But also, vice versa. In Greta Gerwig's live-action Barbie movie, the inciting event of the plot comes when stereotypical Barbie, played by Margaret Robbie, is affected by Mattel employee Gloria, played by America Ferrara, drawing pictures of alterna Barbies, like Irrepressible Thoughts of Death Barbie. In the film's Barbie Land, the lone figure marked by the off-script creativity so common in children's play is Weird Barbie, played by Kate McKinnon. With her hair chopped off, her plastic skin marked by crayons, she's incessantly doing the splits because someone played too hard with her. By August, Mattel had started selling a special edition Weird Barbie based on the character. There's a lot to like about the highest-grossing film of 2023. Much of it is quite funny, although, humor being what it is, your mileage may vary. There's the opening parody deflating the pomposity of Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey, with a tongue-in-cheek version of Barbie's origin story. The pitch-perfect detail of Barbie Land set design, the surreal vision of a live-action doll world. There's the reversal of what Laura Mulvey called the male gaze in Barbie Land, where Barbie has a great day every day, but Ken only has a great day if Barbie looks at him. There's the mockery of male ego when the Kens try to take over Barbie Land, but are distracted by the irresistible temptation to explain the Godfather or cryptocurrency or to play guitar at a woman for 4 hours. There's the Legally Blonde-style puncturing of expectations about dumb blondes every time Barbie comes out with some sophisticated articulation of a moderately complex idea. And there's the refreshing experience of seeing a mainstream big-budget film in which an intelligent tween girl gets to be caustic about the planet-killing dangers of capitalism. There's nothing wrong with a little escapism. Certainly there's enough in the world that we might want to forget for a couple of hours. And it's fun to share those memes and repurpose Barbie culture for our own ends. But of course, the pleasurable escapism of the movie has limits, and the still artificial plastic and pastel quote-unquote real world that the movie's Barbie visits when she leaves Barbie Land should not be mistaken for the actual real world we live in. In our real world, the average Mattel worker in 2017 made $6,300. Rithika Ramamurthy, writing in Nonprofit Quarterly last year, reads the Barbie film as an allegory for the company's pivot from a focus on manufacturing to a focus on franchising its intellectual property, as with its control of this film, in which, as one character comments, Mattel makes the rules. Ramamurthy writes, quote, "The U.S. corporation behind one of the world's best-selling toys is, like many industries, a horror story of corporate pressures exploiting overseas workers, dependent on low wages, dangerous conditions, and tax evasion to stay profitable. While the film, after its most popular product, does not represent this history, it portrays a world in which Mattel is all-powerful and in on the joke." End quote. As Tithi Bhattacharya noted last year in Truthout, Barbie lets us laugh at the patriarchy, but not at the expense of corporations. The film includes a speech from Gloria in which she lays out some of the double binds faced by women, a speech some viewers have seen as exemplary feminism and others have called strangely old-fashioned, but that Bhattacharya describes as, quote, a Hillary Clinton campaign speech. Not the everyday advice working-class mothers are forced to give their daughters worldwide to make sure they at least get through high school or that they come home safe at night from their call center job. A bourgeois childhood ideal where we seek success within capitalism is portrayed as universal, made more acceptable by being voiced by a woman of color. Mattel, unsurprisingly, asks women to be bosses, not to fight them. End quote. Near the end of the film, Barbie wants to return with Gloria to the quote-unquote real world, but the ghost of Barbie inventor Ruth Handler, played by Rhea Perlman, tells Barbie that she can't let her become human without knowing what it means, so she grants her a vision of humanity. That vision consists of a montage of home movies and images of the friends and family of the film's cast and crew. For the movie's Barbie, being human evidently happens entirely in a bourgeois private sphere, where there's no sign of war, climate disaster, or any of the other ills of capitalism. When the nominations for the Academy Awards were announced, Barbie was nominated in 8 categories, including for Best Picture and Best Adapted Screenplay, but not including Margaret Robbie for Best Actress in a Lead Role or Greta Gerwig for Best Director. Disappointed fans of the film took to social media to say that the failure to recognize these women's accomplishments echoed elements of the movie's critiques of patriarchy. But as Aya El-Khaldi noted in Middle East Eye, the public conversation around the Oscars' so-called snub also became an opportunity to shine a light on Palestinian women's plight in the ongoing Israeli attack on Gaza. Among the fans offering consolation and praise for Gerwig and Robbie was, of all people, Hillary Clinton, who has repeatedly argued against a ceasefire. Reports on the situation in Gaza from UN Women and other sources indicate that 70% of those killed by Israel have been women and children. By March 1st, Israeli forces had killed at least 9,000 women in Gaza since October, with another 63 being killed each day. In the famine that Israel has created, almost every Palestinian in Gaza is going hungry, but mothers are especially likely to forgo food in order to feed their children with what little is available. The lack of basic hygiene is leading to women and girls suffering more urinary tract infections. There's no treatment for those whose IUDs have become infected. Pregnant people in Gaza are undergoing cesarean sections without anesthesia. While the Oscars brouhaha provided another route for calling attention to these atrocities, this is my least favorite form of repurposing Barbie culture. But at least we're probably safe from Mattel coming out with a genocide Barbie. No wonder we want to escape. For the Old Mo, this has been Fran Michel.
Something about my life. Maybe give me insight between black and white. And the best thing you ever done for me is to help me take my life less seriously. It's only life after all. Yeah. Well, darkness has a hunger that's insatiable. And lightness has a call that's hard to hear. And I wrap my fear around me like a blanket. I sail my ship of safety till I sank it. I'm